providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Those last two segments, when we chatted with Data Lyons, we focused a bit more specifically on market moves and some of his shorter-term trading strategies. We're going to wrap up this show in the final two segments with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Now, Mark, I first just want to get broad comment from you on the major differences that we are seeing from Q1 2023 compared to last year, Q1 2022. Markets are clearly moving in a very different direction. We had a banking crisis to deal with in Q1. But look, there's a lot of changes in terms of economic growth, economic data that we are seeing. In terms of what you have noted, what you think are some of the biggest differences we've seen compared to the first quarter of last year, break that down for us, please.
Yeah, sure. I think that one of the most important differences is that in March of 2022, the Federal Reserve began raising interest rates. And here in March 2023, the Federal Reserve is probably, if not done, maybe one more hike away from being done. So March 2022, we're just beginning the tightening cycle. And many of us thought, even at the time, we talked about things that like the Fed would raise rates until something broke. Many of us thought it would be the labor market. Some people thought inflation would be lower, but ultimately it was financial stability. And the banking stress that we had earlier this month is seen taking off from the terminal rate where people expected Fed funds and where the ECB was thought to go, taking off about 50 basis points from that, from those levels. So the first thing I'd say is the monetary tightening cycles were just beginning early last year and now look like here as we have get into Q2, just about done, maybe one hike away for some of the big central banks. The other thing I think of note is that in the first quarter of last year, the U.S. economy contracted primarily because of trade and inventory adjustments. And here in Q1 23, the Atlanta Fed saying that with today's data, that the economy is likely tracking about 2.5% annualized pace, a little bit faster than the market expects. And what strikes me about that is that the Federal Reserve's dot plot from last week, the median forecast from Fed officials is for the economy to grow only 0.4% this year. So if we get 2.5% or even 2% in Q1, the Federal Reserve's forecast seems to be for a quarter or more of contraction. So a different economic outlook, as if the what makes this year different than last year. Last year, we were still in the upswing. We had that weakness in the first half, but then we came roaring back second half of last year. And now it looks like the economy is truly rolling over.
Yeah, Mark, it may be a more muted growth year for GDP, but in general, it seems like a lot of the concerns over the last couple of weeks in the banking sector and the worry if something else could break are past us now, or not maybe past us, but it seems like the worst is past, because when you look at the market complacency, the VIX is down. Most markets are up, whether it's the general markets, the cryptos, the commodities. Everything seems to be back to where investors are feeling comfortable getting back in the water. Do you think that's all because, like you said and on the onset there, that most people see this being the end of the tightening cycle, not just for the Fed, but really across the board with central banks? Is that optimism coming in as far as market participants that, hey, doesn't matter if we have slow growth, doesn't matter if we have one more 25 basis point hike, we're almost past that storm as well?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think, too, that the markets coming out of this banking crisis feel like that a soft landing is more likely now, curtailing the aggressive Fed tightening to some extent. And I think we see this in the different markets, but that I think the key takeaway is that the most acute part of the banking crisis seems to be over. You know, I was looking at that KBW bank index, up almost 4% this week, first week in four that's rising. Same general story in Europe. The European bank index was off for the past 3 weeks, and this week it's up over 6%. And so what's happened then is that as the banking crisis eased, bank stocks recovered, not fully, of course, but they stabilized, turned higher, and the market is also feeling more confident of another Fed rate hike. We see this in the U.S. two-year note. You know, the last 3 weeks, the U.S. two-year note yield was off more than 100 basis points, closer to 130 basis points. And this week, we rose 33 basis points. And what this means is that the market now looks for the Federal Reserve, and this is the where we're going to be at the end of the year. The market, a week ago when we were talking, we were almost at 4%. And now, after this week's adjustment, we're at about 435. And so this, again, is the pendulum of market sentiment swinging back. And I think that this has spilled over and helped world equity markets. It's not, like you mentioned, it's not just the U.S. In fact, looking at it now, the S&P 500 is up almost 3% this week. But the major markets in Europe are up over 4%. And I think this is just generally global equity markets sort of a sigh of relief that we're not headed for a 2008 repeat.
So, Mike, it just brings up the never-ending question of, are we getting a soft landing? Are we getting a no landing? Or is this just kind of the lull, the calm before the storm? No one knows to be for certain. Quite frankly, history will tell. But when it comes to rates, we have seen a big pullback in rates. Would you be confident enough to say that we've seen the high in rates for this year, even if they might go higher a little bit from here, they've come back enough off their highs that it's at least a more stable rate environment?
I think so. I think that's a fair assessment that, you know, the U.S. two-year note yield got above 5%. And I think that that no longer seems reasonable to people. Maybe 4% is too low. And I think that the key issue going forward is not so much the economic data, but any kind of indication of the duration and magnitude of the tightening of lending conditions. So yes, the banking crisis will lead to banks strengthening their balance sheets. How much? How long does it last for? And I think people, many economists, I think, sort of jumped to the conclusion that it was worth 50 to 75 basis points of tightening. And I think that that's because we all have the scar tissue from 2008. But I think as the dust settles, I think it'll be a much more mild impact.
Well, Mark, if you think that rates could still go a little higher, but maybe won't be breaking out to new highs, you know, one of the stories that we have today on Friday is that gold is making as far as the way it looks like it's going to close today, is going to make an all-time high on the monthly chart and an all-time high on the quarterly chart. So two all-time highs in gold today on the longer duration charts. But if rates are going to rise, you had mentioned to us off mic that you think that could be a little bit of a wet blanket on the precious metal sector. I'd love you to break that thought down.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, back in earlier this month, gold went from about $1,800 an ounce, looking at the spot cash market, got above $2,000. Since we got above $2,000 back on March 20th, we've really been consolidating, moving in about the same range that we moved in from on the 20th and the 21st. We've been stuck in that range, and that range is roughly 1935 to that high of almost 20,010. So on one hand, I think technically it looks like we're carving out a triangle pattern, and that often is associated with a continuation pattern, which would be bullish for gold. On the other hand, as a fundamentalist, I tend to emphasize for gold the direction of the U.S. dollar and U.S. interest rates. And I think that because I anticipate further rise in U.S. rates in the very near term, perhaps helped by anticipation of another strong jobs report at the end of next week, I have yields going up a bit higher. So I kind of think gold's going to test the downside. And the downside that's important, I think, right now is about 1935 to about 1945. And if we go through those levels, I think that we could really get a more serious breakdown, a retracement of this big rally we've had this month. In general, my view really is, so how I would tactically play that, I think, is that I take advantage of strength to sell into rather than a dip to buy.
So, Mark, overall, though, do you think that a turn in gold would break some of those support levels? Because as much as gold has done well and as much as we might see some higher rates, it still does look quite bullish, or at least quite positive for gold moving forward, even if it gets a little bit of a correction.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think it's always like, that's always a hard thing for people who are very active in the markets, things always look strong when they're near the highs, and they always look weak when they're near the lows. And I just think that the momentum indicators that were carried us up almost $200 an ounce this month has really stretched the technical indicators, momentum indicators. And so my leaning would be that this works for the dollar and many of the other parts of the capital markets. Is not really, besides the Bank of Japan, we get the Bank of Australia, the Reserve Bank of Australia, the Bank of Canada, but the big central banks like the Fed, the ECB, don't meet in the month of April, but meet in early May. And so I think we're going to just be, my general sense would be one of that April is one of a consolidation type of month. And with the, so that means that in consolidation, you've got to do both sell highs and buy lows. That is a non-trending market. And I think that's what I'm looking at in gold, is that we back and fill a little bit after this $200 rally.
Well, Mark, you brought up the global currencies there. So let's dive into those. I mean, as far as the dollar, one thing that was strange, and we talked about this last week, was that there was at one point a pretty strong bid coming into bonds, into gold, into yen. But you mentioned that you thought the yen was more of a carry trade and just more people liquidating other positions to go back and repatriate into the yen. But the dollar was not getting a big bid. And so people look at the dollar strength in isolation, but really it's counterbalanced against six major currencies in the Dixie basket. But in general, the dollar hasn't gone anywhere during this whole month. It's just kind of been trending really more lower than higher, and it's kind of been range bound. What's your outlook on the dollar, and then in contrast, how that relates to other global currencies?
Sure. So I like the fact that the dollar index is testing that 102 area. You know, we briefly dipped below it last week, but holding above it this week, I tested it a couple of times. I think this is the low, and I think we get a bounce back. Maybe it goes up to 103. Best case, I think, is that 20-day moving average, which is about 103.60. So the dollar index, so broad measure of the dollar, I think we get a bounce in the greenback to begin the new month. On the other hand, I think you're right that this past week, almost all the major currencies except the Japanese yen gained against the U.S. dollar. And it's hard to know how much of this is market positioning for the, you know, the quarter end. For many, at the fiscal year end, it's not clear to me, but it also seems that key levels have more or less held. So we did get above 109 in the euro. We got above it twice last week, and both times it was rejected. Same kind of thing happened this week. We got above 109. We even closed above 109, but it hasn't been sustained. It won't be sustained ahead of the weekend. Sterling got above 124, and you know, it reached 124.5 back in December and then in January. But we haven't been able to sustain that either. So we got close to the old high, couldn't sustain it. And so that's just sort of, I think what's happening is that the dollar just, the foreign currencies like the euro, sterling, moved from the lower end of their range to the upper end of their range. But that's all they've done. No real breakout. And I kind of think that the rule of thumb in this kind of market is play the range until proven otherwise.
Okay. But Mark, if your thought of a bounce here and the dollar is up to 103, that would still be, you could argue, in a bit of a downtrend, because just this month, the dollar looks like it's going to be down almost 3%. That's one of the largest drops since November in the dollar. And yes, it didn't break the January low, but again, only a bounce to 103, 104 level. That's not bullish in my eyes.
Right. No, I agree with you. And in the big picture, I'm in a camp that thinks the dollar made an important high last September or October. The dollar, when you really think from a big picture perspective, the dollar's been rising for 10 years. And so the real issue then to me is, has the big super cycle of the dollar ended? I think it has. I would look at these kind of bounces that we get, like the one I'm anticipating for part of April, is really a short-lived and corrective in nature, with the real trend going to be lower. I think about it, like, what's the driver? Well, I thought that the driver for most of the dollar's rally in the past year or two has been the aggressiveness of Fed policy, both real and anticipated. And I think that the financial stress that we saw earlier this month has reinforced the idea that the Fed tightening is over. I think the market might have got ahead of itself thinking like a week ago, thinking 100 basis points of cuts this year. But I think that the market is going to be slow to give up this idea that the Fed is done or nearly done. And that, I think, removes a big weight on the foreign currencies.
Well, Mark, when you think of the dollar, at least I think of, you know, how it's counterbalanced against a lot of the raw materials in the commodity sector. And even if it bounces to 103, 104, that's not a huge move in the dollar. Again, it stayed mostly muted. But what we have seen in response is most commodities truck a little bit higher in the month of March, not just gold, but also silver. Silver is above $24 now. Copper's had a nice move. It's got a four handle again. You've seen oil rebound from the mid-60s to now the mid-70s. So what do you make of some of the strength in the commodity sector, and where do you think it's heading?
Yeah, so when I think about commodities, I have a role for the dollar in that, but I think that part of this is growing confidence of the Chinese economy. You know, the IMF says the Chinese economy is likely to account for about a third of the world's growth this year. And what I suspect that they've done, the Chinese, have purposely underestimated growth this year after disappointing last year, so they could surprise on the upside. I think there's, of course, there's always supply disruptions in the commodities. I'm thinking about problems with oil between Iraq. And I think that generally speaking, I think it's really this people wanting, seeing the financial stress, wanting to buy things that Dennis Gartman used to talk about that hurt when you drop on your feet. Bonds don't hurt. Commodities do. And that is, you want to buy things of weighty, things that you could, tangible assets, when the financial markets have gone, again, you know, a period of crisis and stress. I'd be watching those commodities, not just with the dollar, but Chinese demand. And earlier today, China reported their PMI. And even though the manufacturing PMI was a bit soft, the service sector, or I should say the non-manufacturing sector, which includes construction, which is a big demand for commodities, was much stronger than people expected.
Really seems like a bit more of a balanced market in all fairness here, where it's not just money flowing into the markets, it's also flowing into commodities, and it's also flowing into some generally safer assets. I know it's not much, but even bonds are up this year. So look, it is a bit more of a balanced market. I do want to turn it back a little bit more big picture, not so much to the banking squeeze, more what everyone is saying on the back end of that, that lending is going to remain tight, and that is going to really put handcuffs on the economy, on a lot of other things too, including the markets. How do you view this potentially longer term implication or longer term narrative for these markets?
Yeah, I think you're right that I think most people, most economists at least, would agree that financial stress is a deflationary force. That is, that it slows economic activity. Makes sense to me. The problem, though, the challenge that we have is sort of like the known unknown. And what we don't know is the duration and the magnitude of this tightening of lending, of lending that's likely to come forward. We already know from a recent Fed survey, you know, they do a survey of senior loan officers. That's from the big banks. And that already showed the big banks were tightening lending standards. So for people like me who think that the U.S. economy will weaken as the year progresses, even if we don't have two quarters of contracting growth necessarily, the weakness of the economy, I think that the seeds have already been planted, and the financial stress just adds to that. So I do think that we should be looking for a couple of things: slower inflation. And what's going to happen is the March U.S. CPI jumped 1% in 2022. So that's going to be replaced by a lower number of some magnitude, which is going to keep the inflation falling or slowing in the U.S. And we just need to buy a couple more months of time until the housing prices filter into the Fed's data, into their methodology. And that'll probably be the next leg down for CPI. I am concerned that economists have, to me, they just jumped to the conclusion because of the 2008 experience, trying to come up with a fine point magnitude of how much the financial stress is going to impact the economy or how much tightening it's worth. And I think that the initial estimates were too pessimistic, that the headwind might not be as great, even though the U.S. economy still seems set to slow down.
Well, Mark, what do you make of the trend that we've seen over the last few weeks for money to come out of deposits in banks and go into the money markets, which is more backstopped by the T-bills or overnight, you know, Fed liquidity than it is the banking sector? So money is leaving banks, deposits, and going into money markets. What do you make of that trend, and what does that mean for how the bank strength may go moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to think about what happened. Like, think about inflation. Many people think it's either government spending, too easy of monetary policy. But I try to like, I like the KISS method, keep it simple, stupid. And the reason prices are going up is because businesses are raising them. And I think the same thing is happening, but in the opposite among banks. They have not passed on the higher cost of money to us poor depositors. And so people like myself, for the first time, I have taken some of my money out of the bank in a deposit and bought a T-bill. I can buy the T-bill directly from the Treasury. I don't have to pay a brokerage fee. It goes right into my, it gets an ACH from my checking account and put back there. So I think that there's something to the fact that money is still leaving the banks because they're not paying us enough money to keep it there. On the other hand, it sort of makes it complicated about how banks loan money and how much a smaller deposit base is going to cramp their ability to loan. I'm not sure that's really the case. I think what they want to try to do, and the reason it's going to slow down bank lending, is really more about strengthening their balance sheets to sort of what happens right after, sort of like passing a police car on the road and slowing down for a little bit after you see them to try to be, think of being safe, even though it's a bit like closing the barn door after the horses have bolted. And so I think the same thing that the market typically does. But I am concerned about the about like the general liquidity. And so what happens then is that, and this is why I'm not fully convinced that the banking crisis, about bank shares have rallied, still seems from the Fed's data that the banks are still borrowing a lot from the discount window and that new facility, that term facility that they created a couple of weeks ago. So my general sense is yes, but you know it's sort of strange, right? That banks are so important in the way capitalism works, and yet it seems to be the weak link. And I think that continues. And so what I think what this means to me is that the kind of economic data we're going to focus on is not going to be so much the inflation numbers. We know that those are going to be elevated, even if they come off. It's not going to be the jobs data, though we know the jobs market remains relatively robust. But the key is going to be how long do the how long do the commercial banks borrow at elevated levels from the Federal Reserve? And once their borrowing seriously falls, this past week it only fell by a few billion dollars, a couple percentage points. When we see those levels recede, I think we'd be more confident about the economic outlook and the fate of the future of banks. I think small and regional banks are probably going to be raising their deposit rates to encourage people to keep their money there.
There is an alternative. Hey, Mark, that's a big difference also from, I think, even last year at this time. Because rates are higher, people can make money simply sitting on some cash or going into more dividend yielding assets. Before we get you out of here, Mark, if we don't have, let's say, the Fed and a couple other major central banks meeting this month, what do we need to watch for? What could change the direction of markets? What could change the mentality of investors over next week, even the next couple weeks?
Yeah, so next week, holiday shortened week for many people, for many financial centers. Jobs data is going to be the key economic report. I say that because even though we get the PMI, the Purchasing Managers Index, the flash reports are so close to the final that it really steals most of the thunder. I think that the jobs data, but again, I think that the central bank's data, money supply figures, these are going to come back into favor as a way to try to monitor the impact of the banking stress we had. I know many people like myself going to continue to follow bank shares to see if that stress does stay away from them. And I think the other thing, of course, I think is how officials, the kind of forward guidance we get from the Fed speak and from speakers of the at the ECB. Interesting thing in April is going to be the first, the Bank of Japan is going to have their meeting late in the month, and the new BOJ governor, the new BOJ team is going to be in place, and they're going to update their forecast, which will be the first like signal of their intentions.
All right, Mark. Great having you on the show. Thank you so much for taking time with us on this weekend show. We will be chatting with you again next Friday. And everybody, thanks for tuning in to the Weekend Edition. Please keep in touch with Shad and I, and please go back through our website and podcast to listen to those daily editorials. Let us know your thoughts on the markets and the companies that we feature throughout the week. Everybody, Mark, you as well. Hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.